Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hey Kids Comics, issue 98. We are knocking on 100, Cole. We are knocking on the door.
We are getting so dangerously close that we could say we may as well just call it 100 right now. Can we do that?
We've got to...
No, because and when we get to number 100, it'll make a lot more sense why we can't do that.
Right. Now, granted, with double size, like you were saying earlier today, with double size issues and specials and all that, we are basically at 100. But
yeah, that's true. We were mentioning that this is, in fact, I think if I'm not mistaken, we have done the unthinkable. This is actually 97.
Is it 97? Okay,
it is 97.
Yes. And that is absolutely
fine. We're so anxious
fine.
To get to 100 that we would even skip a number. Not that we haven't done that before.
Right.
You know, the lost issue with that one that fell into the swamp gas.
The one that was lost in the Pine Barrens in New Jersey.
Yeah.
But yes, it's been a wild ride so far, and only stands to continue to be so. We thought we would revisit. We have done a disservice, Cole has realized, and we thought we would revisit something we said we were going to revisit 50 issues ago. Literally 50 issues of Hey Kids Comics ago, and that is our recommended reading.
And so, you know, we've kept you waiting. You've had no idea. Our apologies. What do I read? What should I go out and seek out? And we appreciate that most of you have taken the initiative and found things that you might recommend to us.
Absolutely.
So please write in to jcumail@yahoo.com. If you have recommendations for us to check out and recommend on your behalf, or just say, you know, here's a listener recommendation, check it out. If we don't have a chance to check it out ourselves by the time we do this again. And ideally, that won't be 45, 50 issues later.
I will say this. Taffeta joined us, 2 weeks ago now? 2 issues ago?
Yes.
And recommended some books that we maybe should check out. And Lacey and I went out to a comic shop this Wednesday, yesterday at the time of this recording, and we picked up Rat Queens, which was came very highly recommended by Taffeta, and it is excellent. It is
that
a
is good
great
to hear.
Book.
I mean, not that we were doubting, recommendations, but you know, it's nice to know that that is living up to expectations for you. And
right, so you know, we are not the end all be all of recommending books for y'all to read.
And that's why we want you to write in and recommend as well. And also, if Taffet is listening, or even if she's not, the number one show on the network this month is Women Into Comics featuring Taffeta.
There you go, Taffeta. Thank you for making your appearance on the show. We do appreciate it. Welcome back anytime. But yes, so recommended reading to Part Due is this week's issue. Like we said, it is 97. And in the last one, you know, we went and gave you some ideas on what we're reading and what we really enjoy and why we really enjoy it. And we've got some more picks this week. I went ahead and pulled three titles. I think Cole has two or three himself. One of mine is kind of a nod to current events. So I'm going to save one for last. But Cole, you want to go first? Or you want me to start
so
the Royal Rumble?
So it's current, yet it'll be the last thing.
Right, because I can't, I do recommend it, but it's one of those recommendations that I make tongue-in-cheek. When somebody asks me what to read, I'm going to be like, yeah, you should read Watchmen and the Joker's Last Laugh and Great Lakes Avengers number one. And that's the books, you know, it's that one. It's that last one. People are like, what, really? Sure, read it. Why not? It'll be fun. It's the Fredo of my group of of my grouping, of my trilogy of books. It's my Mickey Mouse. Hey, it's my Mickey Mouse. So you want to get this ball rolling? You want me to, buddy?
I think I'm gonna let you launch this thing out here, and then we'll kind of jump back and forth thusly.
All right.
And regardless of how we do it, we'll wind up with your your last recommendation.
I want to say it's from both of us, Cole. My last recommendation is going to be from both of us. I might be presenting it, but I think once you understand what it is, you will support it wholeheartedly. So I went with two picks this week that have been opened and closed. Okay, so you can pick up the entire run of the two of my two chosen recommended readings in trade form or in single issue form, but the runs are done. So you can read them from beginning to end. I thought that would might be nice that you can pick them up. So I picked two titles, essentially. That one that I know you and I have talked about at some length, and another I don't know if we ever have. So I'm going to start with the one that you and I have talked about at some length, because I think in a lot of ways it's the most interesting, and it's one of the most interesting comic books I've ever read. And I know we have discussed it at least on Collector Sector, if not further into this show. And that would be Azzarello and Rizzo's 100 Bullets.
Back in its heyday, was on everyone's lips.
It's fantastic. And if you haven't read it, if you're new to this, it has come and gone. It was a Vertigo title by DC. I don't want to give away any of the big points. Like we're not here to spoil the books for you, but it is a crime series. At least on the surface, it is a crime series. When you get into it and start reading it, it really seems like a lot of kind of disparate vignettes tied together by one character by the name of Graves. And the idea of the entire thing is, it's what happens if there's no repercussions for your actions. So, let's say you get screwed over, right, by somebody in a major way. Like the first issue of the first book involves a character who makes a lot of appearances later on in the series, but what if you get wrongly imprisoned? What if somebody screws you over and you land in prison? What would you do to get revenge? The idea is this guy shows up. He's this old crotchety dude. He's got a briefcase. The briefcase has all the information on the person that screwed you over, a gun, and 100 bullets, and you're told there's no way anybody can trace these bullets. There's no way anybody can trace this gun. What do you do? And some people take him up on the offer. Some people don't. There's no judgment involved. It's an entire story it's a morality tale on the surface. But then it gets kind of weird.
Because so initially it's a bit almost like the old, here's the box that you push the button and the somebody else dies and you wonder.
It's the Twilight Zone, I think, was the episode with the box where you push the button and you get whatever you want, but somebody dies somewhere. Except the thing is, this is revenge. Not only does somebody die, you can do whatever you want with this and it can't be traced.
You pretty much know who's going to die, too.
Right. But it goes, the story gets broken down so far and gets
the Fletcher you choose.
Exactly. Gets so weird. The story gets so strange that it takes some really weird Machiavellian turns. But without getting too much into that, I mean, you get back to the original colonies in this thing. You get like the What's the name of the crazy grove that all the presidents are supposed to go to? It goes really crazy at some point, but the art is magnificent. It's very fitting for the story they're trying to tell. And it's written in such a way that it's very, and I don't want to say Brubaker-esque, because in a lot of ways I think that the work that that Azzarello does kind of informs what Brubaker's been doing. This is sort of a masterclass on writing a crime story. It's fantastic. If you haven't read it, it's fantastic. There's all these quote unquote crimes being committed, and one cop that's kind of putting the pieces together. One kind of Harvey Bullock type character who's just kind of muddling through and starting to piece together all of what's happening. So it's really interesting. I can't suggest it enough. I didn't think, I'm a comic book superhero type of guy. I'm a guy that likes superpowers and alien rings and larger than life scenarios.
Yeah, the stuff of science fiction and more.
and fantasy, you know, I like my heroes larger than life. And you know, I started reading this thinking, you know, okay, it's all right. I think I picked up the first one, and I was like, I think it was on a suggestion of one of my friends, or, you know, much like we're doing right now. And I'm like, well, I'll give it a shot. It's not really my bag, you know. And I read it, the first one, and I immediately went out, like, I gotta find what happens next, and went out and bought all the trades that I could get my grubby little paws on. And read them all, and they do a great job of bringing characters back and introducing new and inventive ideas. And as soon as you think you get a handle on what's going to happen in this story, they throw you a total and complete curveball, and you're left just asking why and what happened and how. And you know, you think you know a certain character, and then all of a sudden you realize you had no idea why, you know. And they drop. Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where they drop. It's almost like a Grant Morrison-esque type thing where they'll drop something, one line in the first issue that doesn't seem like it means anything, and then they get like 20 issues in, and that line comes right back up, and you're like, whoa, I gotta go back and read that, and all of a sudden, all these clues are there to what's happening, and obviously, start to finish was plotted, you know, and they knew exactly what they were doing at all times, and it's pretty brilliant. It is.
That's the kind of thing I like to see, where, you know, you're constantly surprised, and something that just seems like, you know, so many comic tales just seem to go on, and they, you know, they do their thing, but there's never really a, you know, there's not an underlying vision that just goes on forever, or, you know, that where this thing will be headed in perpetuity. And then to, you know, find those little rare gems where somebody actually is writing toward a very finite story.
Exactly. And
it's pretty amazing.
You can tell by the first, you know, 10 or 15 pages of the first issue that there's an end game to what they're trying to do. You don't know what it is, and it's kind of, you know, ephemeral out there in the ether, but you know that there is something that they're trying to accomplish with this book. And it really, the art and the story really have kind of a pang, or at least a sonar blip of the Frank Miller Sin City stuff, but it's not that kind of dark. It's not super dark and super gritty the way that is, you know, where you can't, you end up so claustrophobic that you can't breathe by the end of like 50 pages. You're just like, I gotta walk away from this for a while because I'm really scared it's actually affecting my emotional state. This isn't that book. Like, you know, there is a chance for characters to be good and not be good by being bad. You know, and that's the difference between something like this and a Frank Miller book. So my first choice is 100 Bullets. Like I said, the entire run is out there for you to pick up and read. And you can buy them all in trade or in omnibus form. So there you go. Choice number one. Buy it.
That's a good way to launch right into this thing, because it's the books that are just the little hidden gems and the surprises and the things you didn't half expect to, you know, to be what they were or what they become, and that are really worth checking out in that way.
Right.
And then I'm going to go into a completely opposite direction.
Okay.
And this is available... there's a massive trade paperback out there that is mostly good.
Okay.
I say mostly good because it collects a lot of different books, a lot of different titles that were published over a period. Some of it's just pretty amazing because it is, you know, it very much puts you in the mind of, and with no, with little wonder, since they're actually pretty much universally written by the man himself. And I'm speaking of, trying to determine who published the damn thing. They've done a good job of not telling you. Actually, yeah, this was published by Graffiti, so it's no surprise there. Graffiti Designs, when they weren't doing t-shirts and novelties and stuff, was occasionally publishing stuff. They actually produced the first hardcover Watchmen.
Oh, okay.
They started doing that stuff themselves. And this is, I'm speaking of a trade paperback called Tales from the Clerks.
Okay. Okay.
A complete collection of all of Kevin Smith's Clerks books.
Really?
There was a Clerks miniseries, a miniseries called Chasing Dogma.
Oh.
It actually fills in the period between the two movies.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you're wondering what Jay and Silent Bob were doing in Illinois. It tells you the whole story about how Lunchbox had to go see the, you know, where all the John Hughes movies were supposedly taking place.
Right.
And it gives you a lot of little insights into all kinds of just tiny little minutia. Clerks is just, I mean, it's pure Kevin Smith. The Clerks stories cover pretty much the entire Clerks saga from, you know, the first movie into Clerks 2, because there are things that take place before the events of Clerks 2, and there are things that take place after the events of Clerks 2.
Nice.
Of course, you know, who knows these characters better than their creator?
Right.
And, you know, there's a whole story with, like, with Trish the Dish. She's a very, I think that's in the first part of the Chasing Dogma. And it's brilliant because, you know, she's a very successful author now.
Oh.
And so it takes place after Mallrats.
I haven't read these at all.
And it's so cool because you get a lot of fun little insights into a lot of the characters. And then the one that for me, you know, just didn't work as well.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, it takes place outside of the effective Clerks view askew universe, and that's the Blunt Man and Chronic. Because it's forced to exist within a very defined realm. But it's still very, you know, very much your Kevin Smith kind of thing going on.
Right on. Well, that's awesome. Like, does it play well? Does it sound like? And is the tone?
Yes, absolutely.
And
it's, you know, it's kind of like the Clerks expanded universe. One of the best is one where they're Randall and Dante get involved in like sort of aftermarket action figure trade. And it pokes a lot of fun at Star Wars collectors and collectors in general, and the whole you know, collectible mentality where people become obsessive. And then there's also a story that covers something I had not really noticed, was the interim storefront between Quick Stop and the video store.
Oh, really? No, I didn't notice it either. What's
yeah,
in between there?
There's actually a third door between the two.
So they're not, they don't abut each other, which is what I always thought.
Yeah, there's actually something in between, and there's a fun little romp of a story there. There's a whole story with Steve Dave. And, and, you know, there's just like all this, and different artists for each of each issue. So you've got artists that run the gamut from, you know, just downright amazing to, yeah.
Yeah. When you get any kind of anthology work like that.
Yeah, they're good artists, but, you know, still.
Well, good. That's awesome.
And, you know, you have to bear in mind, it's Kevin Smith, so a lot of it is not for kiddies.
Well, yeah.
But one of the best ones in the Clerks book, in much the same way that, you know, you've got this great opening to the Chasing Dogma, is there's an entire story of what happens between when they go into the funeral, the wake.
Right.
And when they are, you know, you have the scene where they go in and, you know, he's talking about how Donnie says, you know, you hate people, but I love gatherings. Ironic. You get this story of what happens. You know, they go in, and then the next scene in the movie is them being chased out by the
right.
entire family.
Right.
What happened? Why were they chased out?
Oh.
No, there's something about knocking over the casket.
Yes.
But what led to that? I mean, that would have been a great lost scene. It probably would have not been not a good thing in the
right.
Sometimes it's good that the directors don't indulge everything, even if it's great stuff.
Yeah, it's the
it would drag the whole thing down. You know, just be one more big gag. But taken out of context by itself, it's a whole lot of fun, and it fills in a little bit of a blank.
That's awesome. So definitely pick that up, right? That's
If you can find, look around for Graffiti Designs, Tales from the Clerks, and you know the design is very much like the old EC. So you've got this photograph image of Dante and Randall from Clerks 2, and then there's the little sidebar bubbles.
Yeah.
You know, Dante and Randall, Jay and Silent Bob, Bluntman and Chronic.
Oh, that's cool. Like, that's awesome. All right.
Yeah. It's very invocative of some of the, you know, great genres of comic history. There's the old horror movie look. The original volume was... It's a huge book, so I'm sure it was not cheap. But the nice thing is a lot of times you can pick up trade paperbacks in the aftermarket at a very nice price. And I have no idea what I paid for this damn thing. The pricing eludes me at this point.
Right, if you can get to
it's 63.12 or something.
Get to your used bookstore, your half-price books, and a lot of times you can find them.
Probably entered 99, which is ironic.
If look for something ending in 99 cents, you'll find it.
You'll find it. But yeah, ask around about that. Try to find it. It's a lot of fun, especially if you're a Kevin Smith fan and you want just some more Clerks backstory.
That's awesome. That was an unexpected choice.
Yeah, and a complete just could not be more different than yours to start with.
Well, would you like to take it in a whole nother different direction?
I'm not. We should always take things in other different directions.
Okay. Back in, I think it was 2000. I think they were launched in 2000. There was an imprint comic company that was launched in 2000 by the name of Cross Gen Comics. Do you remember Cross Gen?
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember the name.
Mateus was involved, and he decided that he was going to create CrossGen Comics, essentially. So he brought in some big names. They were going to do creator-owned titles, freelancers doing their own thing, and they were salary for their work that they did for CrossGen.
Was CrossGen the one that had the, Ariel or something like that? There was like some... medieval sword and sorcery type of.
Oh, don't take the don't steal my thunder now, buddy.
Oh, okay. I'll just shut up.
Matter of fact,
if this is what I'm thinking of,
their first round of books were Sigil, Mystic, Meridian, Scion, and then they had like a anthology type CrossGen. It was all based in the same universe, and the whole idea was that there was this group of people that had these sigils on them, and they were the heroes. They had some special purpose or power, and that was the kind of joint universe that it was built in.
Special power is the way to go, because a special purpose sounds dirty.
What happens with Steve Martin and Bernadette Peters and his lamp and the circus, that's... I'm going to write home and tell my mom I found my special purpose.
There you go.
Was a story... in their second round of books, that was one of the best sword and sorcery books I've ever read in my life. And if you know anything about me outside of comics, and even in comics, I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of sword and sorcery books and comic books and that whole genre. And that book was called Sojourn.
That's the one I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, we are of the hive mind, Cole. Don't worry, you and I are of the hive mind. And what was cool about this book, especially for the time period, well, first of all, it was written by Ron Mars. You might know, and you remember Ron Mars. Ron Mars was both a DC and Marvel, and sometimes both DC and Marvel author.
Yeah, that was a rare thing at some periods in history where you weren't really allowed to be both.
Well, not only was he both, he wrote for Silver Surfer for a long time, and he wrote Green Lantern, which is how I was introduced to him, but he also wrote the Marvel and DC crossover, if you remember.
Ah, yes.
So he wrote both Marvel and DC at the same time, because, you know, when you stride mightily like a titan across both major publishers, if you're looking for a guy to write your crossover...
Kind of like the Colossus of Rhodes, and one side of the city is Marvel and the other side is DC.
Right. And
that's for, you know, for you...
That's for Kelly.
For you, scholars, yeah, for Kelly, and for you scholars of the classics.
But, I mean, the guy wrote...
The Seven Wonders.
The guy wrote Batman vs. Aliens, which was fantastic. The Marvel DC book, you can a lot of people can take it or leave it, but his work on Green Lantern was mythic. I mean, it went down in history. He wrote the Emerald Twilight storyline for Green Lantern, which was the story which Hal destroys the city and becomes Parallax, and Kyle Rayner gets chosen and brought into the Green Lantern role. He went on to write for Top Cow, which was Witchblade, Cyber Force, all those books. Came back to DC, wrote some of the Sinestro Corps War stuff, came back to DC again and started writing for New 52 stuff. So, you know, and he's prolific. But he went on to write this, at some point, to write a book that had 35 issues called Sojourn. Sojourn was a sword and sorcery book. It was arted up, to use a term that we haven't used in a while, by a guy at the time that was kind of not all that well known. His name was Greg Land. He had done some work for DC on Batman, but then went on after doing this book to be snatched up by Marvel to do a whole lot of work, become one of their premier artists. It was one of the rare books for the time period that featured a strong female protagonist. Again, you can pick up all of the issues of this in Collected, and I suggest you do. It was a book that was very unique to the CrossGen universe, which I read a lot of the CrossGen stuff back then. I guess it was sort of like my Rick Gutierrez's image. Not all the books were particularly great, you know, but this book was really interesting. Because remember what I was saying about everybody carried this sigil with them, and that gave them powers, and that gave them a special purpose within that universe. The sigil in this was carried by the ultimate, the big bad guy in the book, an orc troll dude named Mordath. So it's very Lord of the Ringsy, very Game of Thronesy, but it has a strong female protagonist who's joined by a kind of Val Kilmer from Willow, Mad Mardigan, Mandy Patinkin, you know, Princess Bride swordsman, you know, swashbuckling, smart aleck swordsman type guy. But, you know, if you like the tropes, if you enjoy the sword and sorcery genre for all of its, you know, varied and established tropes, you get almost all of them in these books, but it's often presented in an interesting way. You know, it's not the standard story ideas. They allow a little more flexibility and functionality in these things. The great quest is they're trying to find these pieces of an arrow that they can use to kill the big bad guy. And it's their quest to do that. There's a troop of, or a race of winged, you know, people, bird people, a la the Thangarians or something like that. And, you know, there's a goodly race of ice trolls. And before we ever got to see one of the dire wolves on Game of Thrones, they had a giant wolf that was
direwolves,
huh? Right. They had a giant wolf that traveled with them. And
I do want to point out for you kids out there who are not, you know, fans of paleontology or the or prehistory, George R. R. Martin did not invent the dire wolf.
Here we go.
That was actually a name prescribed to a species, an extinct, long extinct species of wolves that were gigantic. So, if you ever go to like a museum and you complain that you liked it better when it was Game of Thrones, George R. R. Martin was probably hundreds of millions of years in the making. The dire wolves died off.
See, I liked it better the first time when it had three hit die, and I found it in the Monster Manual back in the...
I liked it when it was a Marx, one of the Marx little plastic dinosaur figures.
Right.
It, for some reason, only came in red. All the other creatures came in different colors, but I guess, you know, they thought red was popping for this thing. It was like Devil Dog. But anyway, please go on. That was your moment.
That's my second choice is Sojourn by Ron Mars and Greg Land. The art is fantastic. I should say that. What's really interesting? Yes, it is. It does feature a fairly buxom blonde protagonist. Okay, but not one that is scantily clad. Her armor is armor. She carries a bow. She isn't wearing Wonder Woman booty shorts and a Red Sonja chainmail brassiere or anything like that. She is fully clothed at all times, from what I can understand. And actually, what's really funny is if you're looking for the more provocative character in the book, often portrayed by her sidekick, the swashbuckling, one-eyed swordsman. He's the more provocative and I think probably more over-sexualized character in the book in comparison to the main buxom blonde character. The art is frenetic enough that you get the idea of the action, but there's enough kind of Michael Bendis-esque exposition that you aren't just constantly going from fight scene to fight scene. You get a lot of backstory and drama from protagony between the two characters that you're hard pressed to find in a lot of this kind of book. It's not the Frank Frazetta, half naked riding a dragon into battle type thing. It's actually smart. So my second choice, Sojourn on CrossGen, again available in collected single issue or omnibus form. Strongly suggest picking it up if you're a fan of the Game of Thrones or Dungeons and Dragons type books. It does, I will say this, Land's art does borrow, it struck me as borrowing very fairly heavily from Mike Grell's Warlord, back in the 80s, which is not a bad thing at all. Like, that's a great compliment. So,
and speaking of Mike Grell, really quickly here, if you are listening to this on Friday and you live in the Dallas area, or you'll be in the Dallas area, go by the DoubleTree Hotel in Dallas for the North Texas Comic Book Show, where Mike Grell will be a guest.
There you go.
You can go to Convention Awareness Project to find the link to their site.
Plug! Early plugs!
Early plugs.
All right, so that's my second choice.
Excellent, and that's a really good one because I do remember seeing that book, being really impressed, and having not actually got so far as to picking it up. But there you go.
What's really strange is they went back in at some point and started picking up. Somebody picked up the license for CrossGen, and it was one of the big two. I think maybe Marvel, but they went back and started making books based on the characters, or relaunching books. They never relaunched this book, and this book was the most popular book that CrossGen put out. And I don't know whether it was a function of it being, the sword and sorcery genre, and maybe they didn't think that was going to play well, or what, but they really kind of dropped the ball there, because anybody who would have run with this book again, I think would have found a really strong fan base, and it would have been very popular. But as it stands, the 35 issues are collected, and I can't suggest strongly enough that you guys don't go pick it up.
I will have to check that one out myself, because even though it has the questy element that a lot of times the quest thing is a troublesome to me, because more often than not, quests are never fulfilled.
Right.
The quest concept, especially in television, assumes there's this presupposition that they're going to last until they complete the quest, and most of the time they have no idea how they want to complete the quest, and they just carry on in perpetuity. And then they get canceled. And it's like, where was it? I don't know.
Right.
When we got there, we got there.
I mean, the nice thing about this is because it was played into this whole world of the CrossGen universe. This sigil bit verse that they built. There was no end to the quest once the first quest. It's almost like a D&D type adventure, you know, where, yeah, okay, so your first quest going out, you meet in the bar, you find a guy, he wants you to go get the ring from the dude in the tower, and you go do that, okay, I'm done with that, now what? Oh, no, somebody was kidnapped! Like, it's, you know, you can continue on with the story. It's character-driven, it's not necessarily story-driven, and they do a really good job with that. That's something that Ron Mars has always done very well, is write good characters. So, second choice, Sojourn.
That's an important thing, because you know me, and I'm very big on the character-driven storylines.
Oh, you just wait. You wait till you get to my last one. We're going to get driven by a character, but what's your second choice?
You know, there is actually a net benefit to knowing the unmountable Bobby Blakey. in spite of anything he would say himself. and one place where I've benefited greatly is every now and again, we'll be over at Bobby and Drusilla's, and it'll be like, you want this thing? Here's this thing that, you know, somebody sent me. Marvel sent me, DC sent me. Because Bobby, if you don't know already, is a professional reviewer for the Dallas Examiner.
He just happens to grace us with his presence every once in a while.
Yeah, every now and again he'll come and somehow, you know, in spite of his martial arts prowess and his standing in the community, I've managed to press gang him into all manner of personal projects. you know, over and above everything he's already doing. The man, to my knowledge, does not require sleep.
He doesn't require sustenance. He doesn't require sleep.
Yeah, it's like if you're, if you read Philip K. Dick's "Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?" It's like Buster Friendly and his friendly friends. Blakey is on 24 hours a day.
If there is ever a movie that is made from the JCU, I'm pretty sure they're going to cast Rutger Hauer, circa 1979, to play Bobby Blakey's character. And he's going to shed one single tear while standing outside of a window while I'm dressed in a trench coat holding a gun on him.
That's right.
And then,
no good reason. It has nothing to do with the plot.
I'm going to go back in, and there's going to be a little silver popsicle stick Green Lantern sitting outside of my door, and I'm going to wonder if that means that I'm a replicant or not. Sean Young's going to be in that movie. Yes,
I'll leave little origami things laying around for you.
That's right.
I've got a recommended reading that I can't recommend enough, and I wish I could recommend more simultaneously. This is going to be an odd duck here.
Okay.
One of my absolute favorite comic stories ever written by the near godlike Alan Moore, who I do not personally feel that, but he hits 100% of the time for me.
Right.
He actually hits about 60-40 for me personally. So, before anyone gets the false impression that I just absolutely worship the ground he walks on or the paper he writes on or what have you, that there are places where he just isn't happening.
Sure.
But that said, one of the best comics ever written has been mired in a ridiculous litigation hell
for a long time.
About a decade and a half minimum.
Right.
Maybe longer. And I'm speaking, of course, of Miracle Man, which was originally published in the UK in Warrior Magazine.
Wow.
So long ago that I remember as a kid going to Duncanville Bookstore and seeing Warrior Magazine and seeing, like, the Alan Davis cover or Miracle Man, then, you know, this little sidebar of some of the other things. It was an anthology book. V for Vendetta actually began in Warrior Magazine as well.
Wow, I did not know that. Okay.
Yes, would like 20 years later get picked up by DC and completed, because Warrior went under before the V for Vendetta ended. DC went out of their way to not only pick that up, but they reunited Alan Moore with his artist, who escapes me at the moment, I apologize, for you fans, hardcore fans of the series. But and V for Vendetta was amazing. But Miracle Man...
Ugh.
I tell people Miracle Man is the best Shazam story ever written. because in the UK it was published as Marvel Man, by the way. So when I saw the Warrior magazine, it was actually Marvel Man and V for Vendetta, etc. Marvel Man was essentially a ripoff of Shazam, Captain Marvel.
Okay.
You have a character who, you know, you have a kid who says a magic word and he turns into a superhuman. And he says it again and he returns to normal. And then, of course, in addition to Miracle Man or Marvel Man, there was Young Miracle Man.
Right.
And Kid Miracle Man. So you had the whole Miracle Man family thing going on, or the Marvel Man family, much like the Captain Marvel family.
Like the Fawcett books back in the day.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Back before DC sued them for being a ripoff and got to keep their stuff. The reason let me touch on why I can't recommend this at full.
Okay.
It's because Marvel Comics now has the publishing rights. I don't know if they have full ownership or not. It hardly matters. The important thing is Miracle Man has emerged from litigation hell. Todd McFarlane can suck it. Because years ago, and at intervals, I have owned every single copy of Miracle Man, the individual issues that Moore wrote.
Wow.
And at one time, I owned the very rare First Comics trade paperbacks.
Oh, man.
They were so rare that during the litigation hell period, they were fetching well over $100 a copy.
Holy cow.
And it was like five volumes to tell what Moore wrote. After Moore left, I didn't follow it. I'm sure Neil Gaiman did amazing things, if I'm right about who followed him. It just, Moore told a story.
Right.
That didn't need to be extrapolated on. And in fact, I would occasionally peek in on some of the issues after he'd left. It's like, why are you doing that? That's stupid. It's patently unnecessary. You're just trying to beat a dead horse. You're trying to perpetuate a thing. Don't be like regular comics. That's what this was doing. It was not being like regular comics. Unfortunately, when I heard Marvel, I'd heard rumors that Marvel had picked it up and was republishing, and I found a copy. I found the number two. I thought, oh, I'll find number one somewhere else. And it was at a comic shop where they weren't bagged. So I took a peek.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, yeah, this is... Okay, it's like $5, and half the book is a bunch of reprint crap I don't care about.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, Christopher Walken, damned. So I'm going to pay $5 for half a book.
It's not a Hey Kids Comics without a visit from Christopher Walken.
You've got to have somebody come in.
Somebody's got to come into the studio.
That's right. And so I passed on it. And then more recently, I got looking on Amazon and found that the first two volumes had been published in hardcover. Thank you, Marvel. So they can charge you, what, $30?
Yeah, at least.
Damn thing.
At least $30.
About a third of it is the Moore stuff, and then the other two-thirds is a bunch of... is that reprint crap? And then there's a whole bunch of behind-the-scenes, you know, like development sketches and stuff, which is all well and good, but, you know, that $10 of 30 is eaten up by this.
Right.
Am I really getting my money's worth? I don't think so. But the very first volume is A Dream of Flying. The second volume, The Red King Syndrome, is out, apparently. I was on a hair's breadth of pushing buy on Amazon to buy both of them.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And later that same week, we went to Bobby's birthday party, and I got a gift. I got Miracle Man Book 1, A Dream of Flying, in hardcover. It has been amazing to hold in my hands because I used to have the trade paperbacks. I'd long ago owned twice the entire run in individual issues and sold them at times when I really needed the cash. And at one time I had the trade, so it didn't matter.
Right.
And I made the mistake of loaning all of them to someone, insisting they needed to read them all simultaneously. I never got them back. You know, and I have approached everyone who it might have been unsuccessfully.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I know who had them, but they deny that they ever had them, so, you know, I'm not going to press that. But, you know, when I went trying to find them again, it was proving an impossibly expensive task. You know, $30 for the hardcover actually seems cheap by comparison.
In comparison, yeah, exactly.
But But the reason I can recommend this very highly is, of course, that it is amazing stuff, and it takes the whole idea of Captain Marvel and makes it work in a very sensible sci-fi kind of way.
Right.
And it takes the core concept of switching bodies and turns it into something phenomenal. And it takes the idea of the, you know, the wizened little mad scientist of Dr. Savannah and replaces him with Dr. Emil Garganza, who becomes not only an amazingly developed character, but also is just insanely cool. Everything
awesome.
About his story. And there's a character who's like a government agent, you know, kind of a secret agent type. Who turns coat, who is just an insanely over-the-top character.
That's awesome.
Marvel, I'm hoping that they don't, because so far they've only pulled one punch. The character that I was talking about, who's called Evelyn Cream, they actually censored one of his lines.
Oh, did they?
I don't understand why, but I mean, I had the originals. I knew them backward and front.
Right.
And I recognized where they censored this line. It was pretty obvious because it was like N dot dot dot, or, you know, dash 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 dash. So they censored out the N word. So they kind of pulled that one punch that even first didn't pull.
Yes.
And, you know, I understand that's kind of a necessity. Because they're, you know, Marvel's got a whole different, you know, it's racy enough for them to publish this at all.
Right.
And I'm hoping that they don't. I'm wondering what they're going to do in these collected editions, and I guess those who've been following it in the individual issues that Marvel's printed will know. There's an entire issue of where it's a graphic depiction of childbirth.
Right.
And in fact, the original first comics published issue, individual issue, had a big warning on the label that on the cover that took up most of the picture, or most of the cover. It's, you know, warning graphic imagery of childbirth, and they weren't kidding. And I mean,
they didn't pull that punch.
It was a clinical depiction of childbirth that is actually part of the story, and it actually works within the context of the story. It wasn't gratuitous or anything.
Yeah.
But, I mean, one of the necessities of childbirth and its depiction is, you know, depicting the mother's naughty bits.
Right.
Isn't very much involved. There's no cabbage, apparently, at all. So I'm curious how that's going to go. But if you can grab, if this ever comes out in paperback, grab it then. If you can get it a little cheaper, or someone gifts it to you, take it graciously. Bobby, you know, it was sent to him to review, and he's like, I couldn't make head or tail of it. And I think that's because if you're unfamiliar, you don't know where to stop.
Right. And you always encounter those.
Good. Yes, exactly. I'll tell you right now, if you get to the point where you get to the story where these two guys are sent in to do cleanup work at the Spook Show compound,
yeah,
you know you've stopped, you've left the building.
Well, and
you're now at the point where it's a lot of stuff that's reprinted from God knows where.
Yeah.
Probably good stuff, but it doesn't fit
right.
That story, and it's not part of that story. So don't expect for it to make sense in the same way. And then just move on then to the Red King Syndrome, where you get this incredible, basically you build in, you get a lot of the backstory on Garganza, a lot of the exposition on his character, and he goes from being your typical comic book mad scientist to just downright brilliant. And then as the story progresses, it just gets it's pure Alan Moore insane.
Oh,
you've taken something, these things we've seen so many times, and found a new way to tell these stories and make them beyond anything you'd imagine.
That's amazing. That's awesome. See, I never read Miracle Man. I never did, but now I really want to. So you're giving me hope here.
Oh, there you go. Yes, you definitely need to read the Moore, especially the Moore stuff.
Because I love Alan Moore. I love the Swamp Thing and the V for Vendettas and anything that Alan Moore's done. I pretty much have you've been sold on. So at least there's a part of it, like you were saying, it's like 60-40, but there's a part of every story that Alan Moore does, and it's usually the character development that sucks me in. So exactly. I got to check this out. All right, fair enough. I will. Oh, are you ready for this, Cole?
I'm bracing myself here.
All right. So the big news this week, and to be topical on this show, which we often try to do and most of the time fail miserably because we're old men that like comic books.
Is that like palm trees and coconuts? Oh, that's tropical.
That's tropical. We try to be tropical on this show, too, but yeah. The tiki bar, the contractors haven't put that in yet in the studio, but we're working on it.
I don't buy it either. It just, you know, it's just far too temperate here.
Right. Is
yeah, you can plant a palm tree in your front yard in Wisconsin, but that doesn't make it tropical.
That's right. It doesn't matter how much land shark beer you drink, you're not right. Sitting on a beach with Jimmy Buffett, buddy.
Sorry, parrot heads, you know, if you're that landlocked, you're not tropical.
That's right.
Unless you're in the tropics and landlocked, in which case you are.
You're not really landlocked in the tropics. I don't care where you are. If you're in the tropics, you can get to...
It doesn't matter if you're in the middle of, like, Brazil. You're still not landlocked.
No, you're not. So here's the big news this week. One of the pieces of big comic book news this week is that... And there's a lot of contention here, but I support it. Is that Sam Wilson is finally getting his due. And he's going to put on the Stars and Stripes and become Captain America. God bless him, because everybody's, you know, bitching and moaning that he's his own character and all that, but they're missing the main point of this part of the story, which, not to sidebar too hard, but for Sam, this is a promotion. He idolizes Cap.
I mean, he's being kicked up to the majors now.
Right, he's never really had his own book. He's always been a feature, you know, a feature character, but never the featured character.
It was like Captain America and Falcon.
Right. So he's got the promotion from Sam Wilson to Captain America, and you better damn well believe he's happy about it. You should get behind
it. It's like Art Garfunkel if he'd hit.
Right.
Right. Sorry, Captain America was always Paul Simon.
It's like Oates.
Kind of like Art Garfunkel. He was just, you know, he was there. He's important.
Oates got called up to the big leagues for once.
Exactly.
Let's give him his moment in the sun. You know it's not going to last. It's no worse than time bullets.
Don't you dare deny him this.
Right. He is his own character. He is Falcon, but now he's Captain America. But what I want to talk about tonight...
In all of this, however, I have to point this out.
Yes, please.
Because, you know, I knew immediately everybody like, oh, no, no, no. But my only big oh, no... is at some point he's going to be like tear assing after somebody, and if somebody doesn't do this, I'd be very angry that he doesn't just, like, you know, give a jump and then realize, oh wait, I ain't got the wings.
But is he going to have the wings? Because it would be pretty awesome for Captain America to have the wings.
No reason not to, really.
Right.
I mean,
why
it's
not?
America with a capital A and great big bald
That's
eagle
right.
wings.
That's right. Except bald eagle wings in America.
Bald eagles are endangered and they're a national symbol, so we're not going to condone killing a bald eagle just to have wings.
Freedom ain't free. All right?
That's right.
If he wants to have bald eagle's wings, let him. All right? He can have sparklers coming out of his ass. It's Sam. Let him have it. He's been around for a long time. It's his turn. Let him have his turn, you assholes. But what I want to talk about tonight is not who has become Captain America, Cole. It's what has Captain America become. And what I mean by that was the great Mark Grunwald and artist Rick Levens wrote a book that was one of the most insane comics I've ever read. It was by far the most insane Captain America story I've ever read. And it features some of Cole and I's favorite comic book characters of all time. And this would be Captain America, Man-Wolf. Captain America, through a weird twist of fate, because here's the thing about Captain America. At some point, when you're not focused on his Captain America-ing, you've got to do something with the character. Right, and what I mean by that is, you know, fighting Hydra or getting sent back in time to fight with Namor, right? I mean, you've got Captain America. He's already fought all the terrorists you can think of. What are you going to do with him? Well, you send him into the forest to to get bitten by a werewolf who happens to be J. Jonah Jameson's son. And keep in mind, this is the time period in which he's hanging out with stinky old G-Man and short-haired Black Widow. But he goes after, they introduce a new character in this series, and this is issues 402 through 408. You can pick it up in trade, which is how I have it. Captain America gets called out with his good buddy to find J. Jonah Jameson's son. Do you have a guess as to who his good buddy is, by the way? Do you want to wager a guess if you remember?
Wow. I'm honestly lost.
It's the one and only Scion of Sackcloth, Dr. Druid. He gets sent out with Dr. Druid.
Of course.
And this becomes Captain America and Dr. Druid Marvel team-up, which... come on, how fantastic is that? But Cap gets bitten by a werewolf, okay? Gets hunted by what is this character they introduce? This horrible, horrible character that they introduce. I can't remember the name of Moon Hunter. Gets attacked by the evil Dr. Druid. By the way, there's an evil Dr. Druid. Did you know there was an evil Dr. Druid? Because there's totally an evil Dr. Druid. Yeah, there's a good Dr. Druid, and then Dr. Druid's arch nemesis, what's his name? Druid Home or something like that? But, of course, Wolverine makes his appearance, because there's werewolves, and Wolverine was hot back then. So it's got an appearance in a fight between Captain America and Wolverine. It gets weirder, dude. Just hold on to your hats. So it's good. So far we've had Captain America and Dr. Druid Marvel team up. He turns into a werewolf. He fights Wolverine at one point. But then we get this weird thing where Wolverine isn't good enough just for Wolverine to be in the book, right? After Captain America turns into a werewolf. Who, by the way, not at all blonde. Captain America the Werewolf, not a blonde werewolf, which disturbs me. But there's a great, you know, druid off, Dreadmond the Druid versus Dr. Druid. At the same time, they're having their druid off, which, by the way, is my gypsy name. Cap turned into a werewolf, fights Wolverine. And there's some great scenes of while Cap is just fighting Wolverine, you know, it's a frenetic claw-on-claw battle. There's these two druids just standing eye-to-eye, like passing druid beams, I guess. I don't know what they are. What do you have when you're a druid? Wolfsbane from the New Mutants, later X-Factor and X-Force, and an appearance by Cable. Because how could you make this book stranger and make...
Yeah. At the point where you're having to bring Cable in because you haven't punched it up enough.
So essentially what happened, right, this book did not need to be punched up anymore, by the way, because what you have is a werewolf underground railroad led by a werewolf Captain America freeing all these werewolves that have been trapped by this evil Dr. Druid. And then you've got Cable's appearance. And the cover of the book, which, by the way, is issue 407 of Captain America, has Wolfsbane Wolverine and this Moon Hunter in the background, Cable with these two giant guns and enough pouches to probably, if you were to break down Captain America into his component parts, could be carried off in these pouches, jumping up at Cap Wolf versus Cable, and it says, back off, fur face, of course, because why wouldn't it?
Of course.
But not to, because Druid, evil Dr. Druid, Captain America Werewolf, Wolfsbane, some new character named Moon Hunter, D-Man, and Black Widow weren't enough.
My head is about to explode.
Weren't enough. The evil Dr. Druid finds with a moonstone from J. Jonah Jameson's son, because that's how he becomes Moonwolf, if you remember correctly, right? In the Marvel Universe, finds this, does some weird druid shit to it, and becomes a cosmic werewolf with the power cosmic. With the, you know how whenever the power cosmic's depicted in the Marvel Universe, it's like the stars on a black background, and then the character, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yes, so the cosmic star wolf is born. So the Star Wolf fights Wolf Captain America, and
I'm aghast.
Right, and Cable, and Wolfsbane, and it's the most fantastic. And the reason I want to bring that up, the reason I want to talk about this book, right, because here's the thing, here's the rub of all of this, is that you're all throwing a bitch fit about Sam Wilson becoming Captain America for a while. By the way, he's in this book, of course, because why wouldn't he be? You're all throwing a bitch fit about Sam Wilson becoming Captain America. One of the insane, funnest books that I've ever read in my life is a book where Captain America becomes a werewolf. Comics, again, and I think we need to go back to this as many times, this is a well that we cannot get enough water from. If you've learned anything from us tonight, we've talked about a really awesome crime comic book. We've talked about, by the way, and I want to throw this in there, you find out what happened to Roanoke Island within the confines of the pages of 100 Bullets. That's all I'm going to say about that, if you need to wet your whistle. We've talked about Miracle Man tonight. We've talked about a sword and sorcery book. We've talked about Jay and Silent Bob. We've talked about Kevin Smith. We've talked about Captain America turning into a werewolf and fighting Cable and Wolverine. And a wolf with the power cosmic from the Marvel Universe. Comics are supposed...
I was thinking about possibly doing another one, but I can't imagine following that. So, with our promise of having more of this, we're going to revisit the recommended reading sooner next time. I can't imagine getting anywhere near this thing.
If you haven't read it, please do. It's the most fun, and that's my point. Remember that comic books are supposed to be entertainment. Stop bitching and throwing a fit on the internet. Give it a chance. Chances are it's going to be fun. Just read it and enjoy it, like every other comic book.
And also give it a chance because it's easy to presuppose where they're headed with this.
Right.
Or to look at it and say, they're turning Thor into a woman. They're giving Sam Wilson a shot at being Captain America because they've got to change everything because, the casting of Fantastic Four movie and this. everything's got to be different now. But, I'll give you a lot of times those differences are just sort of pandering.
Right.
In a sense. But at other times, they actually do a very good job of, these choices may seem a little odd at first, but once you see where they're headed with them and, precisely what's going on, then it makes a little bit more sense because, it's different, but is it serving a purpose? Is it telling a story? And I think in this case, it probably is.
Right. What's the last person you've heard say that they're really upset that the New 52 happened?
Yeah.
Or they're really upset that that the Hulk is smarter than he used to be, or they're really upset that
except during the such time as he was smarter,
right?
For those of you who remember back, there was like the smart Hulk and the dumb Hulk and the who knows what else,
right? The red Hulk and the green Hulk and the Fiesta Taco Hulk.
My favorite.
Everything works out in the end. They know what they're doing. They're trying to entertain you, and you're not letting them. You're being a spoiled brat that's sitting in the corner at the restaurant that's mad because you wanted to go to Chuck E. Cheese, and you ended up going to Chi Chi's. That's what you are. Stop it. Just enjoy it for what it is. Live in the comic book moment. That's why they're writing it for you. It's not going to matter in a year or 5 years or 10 years from now. I guarantee you 5 years from now, Steve Rogers will be Captain America again, and you won't have to worry about it anymore. Just give it a chance to have some fun. They're having fun writing it.
Who's Steve Rogers? Because they'll be so used to...
Right.
I think what'll happen is you'll start to see people bitch about the fact that, Sam Wilson, why can't Sam be? I thought he was.
Well, it's the same thing that happened when Dick Grayson became Batman and everybody flipped out about that, right? Like when Dick Grayson became Batman during the time at which Batman got Omega beamed back in time with your brilliant supposition that we don't have to go to into again, but if you need a chance to find it, go back and look at listen to some of the old issues of Hey Kids Comics and listen to Cole's brilliant supposition as to what happens when Batman gets Omega beamed back in time. And Grayson took over as Batman. Everybody for the first 2 months was throwing a shit fit about that. And then all of a sudden they realized, this is fun. Like, okay, Batman we know is going to come back. Bruce Wayne is going to be Batman again. But for the time being, we can enjoy somebody else's Batman. This is going to be enjoyable. And they wrote it out, and it ended up being a hell of a lot of fun. The same thing happened with New 52. The same thing happened with Heroes Reborn. The same thing happened after each and every DC Crisis. Shut up. Yeah. Stop your bitching and enjoy Thor being a woman for a while Thor, because they've already got the story they told you.
Guess what, kids? Thor was a frog for a while.
Right.
And he
was also
the benefit of the internet to bitch about it back then.
He was also a horse-headed alien for a while. Stop it. No, but that's the thing. They've already explained to you what's happening with Thor, because they knew you were going to do this. It's sad that the publisher can't just release something and have everybody go, that's pretty awesome. They've got to prepare for it and say that Thor has to regain his worthiness so he can get his hammer back, and in the meantime, somebody has to be Thor, so it's going to be... They shouldn't have to do that. You're making it not fun. Stop making comics not fun. Stop it. Enjoy it. That's why I hate you, fanboys. Listen to it again and listen to how we revisited it. Shut up and enjoy it. Get off my lawn with your hula hoops and your stupid Yanni. In my day, we would have been happy. Captain America would have been Sam Wilson, and we would have been happy with that. Captain America could have been D-Man, and we would have been happy with that. And on that note...
Smellier version. But...
What do you say we wrap this up and prepare for next week?
Absolutely.
So what do we got next week? It's one. Actually, next week's one I've been looking forward to. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Next week we're gonna, we're getting toward the tail end of summer. You know, the period where if you haven't gone on a vacation or and you kind of want to, but you're not sure where you want to go or what you want to do with it. This is that time of year where we're all kind of thinking along those lines,
right?
And in this particular case, we're gonna go on a very special virtual vacation. I'm not gonna use that stupid word that got coined a few years back because nobody in the country could afford to go anywhere. But hearkening back to those days, we're gonna go and we're gonna take a little bit of a trip around comic books and the world of comics.
Absolutely. This is another one of those ideas that we had where, like, Cole and I are sitting around pitching ideas at each other, and we were like, what about comic book geography? And we're like, I don't know, is there something there? And then all of a sudden we started looking into it, and we're like, oh my God, there's everything here.
It's all over the place. Yeah, so we're going to go to a lot of real and fictional locales, mostly fictional, because that's really what this is all about.
Right.
Is... finding the places that are out there in comics that aren't really out there. And there's really no shortage of them. You know, there's the obvious ones like Gotham and Metropolis and Latveria, to give a Marvel nod as well. But then there's a lot of places that, little lesser known places that don't exist. So we're going to go everywhere from the Savage Land to... Markovia to places I'm not going to mention, because otherwise it'll be like one of those awful movie trailers that shows you only the best parts of the movie, and then it's kind of like, yeah, this is where I came in.
All I have to say is, come to the Savage Land. We have cookies and pterodactyls. That's
right.
So yeah, join us next week. We're going to talk comic book geography. I'm actually pretty excited about it. I think it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. And coming up very soon is the 100th episode of Hey Kids Comics.
Yes, we obviously can't wait, but we're going to wait. And it's going to be amazing. You'll see for yourself when the time comes.
I have a feeling at that point I'm going to have a very special announcement for all of our listeners. Cole is already privy to this announcement, but I'm going to leave it up in the air.
Yeah, that's true.
As for you guys, just stay tuned. It's going to be...
And so if you really want to prove that you're listening to the show, drop me a line at jcumail@yahoo.com. I'm not going to tell you what this is, but you can at least beg to know in advance.
Let's do this. Let's do a contest. I don't know what the prize will be.
There we go.
No prize. It'll be the old Marvel no prize.
You probably have something.
I'm sure.
Otherwise, I'll press Bobby for some freebie.
If you want to guess as to what the special announcement coming in issue 100 from your host me is, because Cole has a here's the thing about Cole. He has something to announce in every issue. There's something going on. He's gonna journey to the center of the earth to interview the Mole Man.
In addition to my Grell this weekend on Saturday at the North Texas Comic Book Show, you can see myself, my co-host from the Rancor Pit, Eddie Medina, and our guest from just a few issues ago, Taffeta Darling, presenting a panel poolside.
Oh, it's one of your famous poolside panels.
Yes, it all started with Deadpool by the pool, and it perpetuates to this day, rain or shine. I won't say that because if it rains, we're going to go inside.
Right, don't say rain or shine. That's a bad idea.
Bad idea. And it'll guarantee rain.
It does, yes, it does.
We don't want Mike Grell getting rained on during his panel.
Because he is a guest at your panel! Sorry. Yeah, I just stole your thunder.
That's pretty cool because the last couple of guests that I've moderated panels on, bless them, were very patient with the fact that I was not terribly familiar with their work. And Mike Grell, at least, if I'm asked to moderate that panel, I can actually
You have that to worry about with that one. So
I've got some street cred there.
So what else is going on besides the Mike Grell panel in the life of the Jedi Cole universe?
Well, host of and creator of What'd You Think, Mrs. Jedi Cole and I have passed 26 years.
Special congratulations from Hey Kids Comics to you.
I don't know what year that is as far as,
It's Unobtainium.
It is the Unobtainium anniversary.
It's the Unobtainium year, yeah.
It's the Cavorite anniversary. Let's see how many people get that one. Or the
Vibranium.
The Vibranium University. University anniversary.
University. I graduated summa cum Wakanda from the Vibranium University.
Very good.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, don't really have any big events coming up. Of course, Andrew and I will be taking on the coveted position of guests on an upcoming What'd You Think? Galaxy. That would have been a very hotly contested
episode, yeah.
Spot, but we pretty much at the beginning of the summer claimed every damn comic book movie.
We locked that in.
Yeah, so that's working out well for us.
We had to pull a little rank there, is what we had to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, well, if you like your show on my network,
it doesn't help me. I was going to say it doesn't hurt that my co-host on this show is the namesake of the network that the show runs on, right?
Speaking of, it does not hurt at all. Speaking of the North Texas Comic Book Show, one of the vendors there from time to time, and a friend of Eddie's, PJ Dunn, will be joining the ever-growing JCU Podcasting Network.
Nice.
With a new show. I've been starting to announce it to force myself to get the production in going for him because he's been very patient about this. Brand new show called Do It Yourself. First episode will be Iron Man 3. It's PJ and his guest discussing how they would have made popular feature films that apparently in their eyes are somewhat lacking.
I do want to say this as a plug. I do a show with Rick Gutierrez called Watch It, which we go back over some of our favorite films and discuss them from days long past. And tonight, this morning actually, and I don't know when it'll come out, but we recorded one on the Thing, the 2011 Thing, as well as the 82 Thing, the John Carpenter's seminal The Thing. And I pulled I got referred to as a Cole Houston. Because I slipped into justification mode at one point, and I couldn't help myself. We were talking about at one point why one of the characters in the thing goes goes kind of haywire and starts blowing up cars and getting rid of car keys and doing things like that. And I had to slip in, and Rick said he didn't understand why that happened and it didn't make much sense to him. And I had to...
It's easy. It's diabetes.
It's diabetes. Favorite care. Oh, I went on a Brimley rant this morning.
Diabetes made me do it.
The likes of which that Quaker Oats have never seen. I went on the greatest Brimley rant that you have ever heard.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So I wanted to let you know I did get referred to as a Jedi cult. I found it to be the highest mark of professionalism when somebody does that. Like, you just had a Jedi cool moment.
I've been challenged to justify a scene. What'd you think? Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Which I did see recently, and it was fantastic.
Is that not amazing?
Holy
think for that was amazing. My brother Clay joined them for the show, and he just had a blast.
How great was that movie?
I've been asked to justify a portion of that movie, and I will probably be doing that as a special very soon.
I would like to sit in on you with that if I could. If you need someone or you would like someone to sit anywhere near you on that.
I was going to do it as a written piece, kind of like the Jedi justifications, but actually, you know, the thing about it is it probably would be more fun to do that as an audio.
Because I would like to hear what, and I don't want to know now, but I would like to hear what you have to justify, and I would like to know how you justify it, because I watched that movie on the edge of my seat the entire time with a certain level of bated breath. I thought it was one of, if not for the Lego movie and Captain America 2, that would probably be the best movie I've seen this summer. And it's up there in the top three fighting for pole position. So it's a fantastic film. It was if you have not seen it, recommended watching. Get your ass to a theater and see Rise of the Planet of the Apes, because rarely has there been a movie that driven to be a good movie. Just good. Rick actually said it best, and I don't know whether he took it from somebody. I hope he didn't. When he said it was the Empire Strikes Back of the Planet of the Apes movies.
The franchise so far. Very well said. Yes.
And it really was. It leaves you in that place where you're kind of heart heavy, but have hope. And, oh, man. And you're rooting for apes. You've seen the movies. You know what happens to Charlton Heston. But you're still rooting for the apes. So
yeah. You're actually getting to the point where you're damn proud of them, and you know, kind of a little spoiler alert here, because this is Hey Kids Comics. By the time you get to the point where you have the Charlton Heston, the '60s Planet of the Apes series going on, where that's a thing,
right?
I think in this movie, perhaps an unintended consequence. The reasoning behind, because I really see the character of Maurice as being the lawgiver.
Right, I do too, yeah, absolutely.
They anthropomorphize him into their current form.
So Zaius, right?
Dr. Zaius...
he's not Zaius.
No. Okay. In the movies, there was a statue of the lawgiver who apparently had handed down the apes all of the laws from time immemorial.
So we're talking really before. We're talking prequel. We don't think that there's, because Lacey was asking me, you know.
I'm extrapolating forward to the '60s.
Okay, is this part of your justification? Because I don't want to hear it if you're justifying.
No, actually, this was not part of that.
Okay, then continue, because I want to hear this.
But I think it's appropriate here because it's comic book related. You know, in the movies. It's obvious that, like, Zaius and the orangutans are aware of the human civilization that predated their own.
Right.
And I think that you see the genesis for the reason that human existence was covered up and areas where they just, you know, didn't have time to eradicate it at full were, you know, considered a forbidden zone, is that in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Maurice is given a book.
Right.
By... the young man that is oh, is it Dan Klaus?
Yes, it is.
Yes, he was given Dan Klaus.
Which was shocking to me and awesome at the same time.
Yes, but I'm thinking, you know, most people won't get it. But I recognized immediately, even before it was gifted, that that was Dan Klaus's black hole. And I'm thinking,
yep.
If this is the example of humanity.
So cool. That's such a good jump.
That the apes are given, and it's handed over to one of their more thoughtful members.
Right.
And potentially the genesis for the mythical lawgiver. It's little wonder that there was a mandate to wipe out any trace of the existence of mankind.
God, that's so smart.
It's on. This would be like if the aliens landed, you handed them a black hole, and they went back. They would come back with an armada. And I'm not saying that black hole is a bad thing. It's just a bad example.
It's super bleak.
It should have been like one of those free library things out by your mailbox. They should have given him a stack of books, but not just that one.
It would be like if he was reading a copy of something by Harry Crumb. And,
they gave him an R. Crumb book or something, you know, like where guys were like...
Yeah, R. Crumb, not Harry Crumb. Harry Crumb was a movie with John Candy. If you gave him a copy of that, there would be a whole different series of movies.
It fell the death knell of... so once word got back to Caesar after the initial, the big RKO production piece there at the end, where they were reproducing, it was like the ape version of Cleopatra on Broadway.
Which is interesting that you would say that. And it's interesting that you would say, and I'm gonna say this now since we haven't had a chance to talk about this, and this is our show, damn it, we can do what we want.
And if we're going to run long, by God, we're going to run long.
That's right. We're getting close to 100 episodes.
You're paying an extra $250 for when you buy Miracle Man by the end of it.
That's right. Did you get the feeling, and I got the feeling, and not to make a Charlton Heston jump, you know, not to make a reference here, but this is the Genesis. This is the Old Testament of the apes that we're watching on film.
I think that works because it plays very well into my contention that Maurice is the mythical lawgiver.
But you've got the Caesar character, and you've got the Maurice character, and you've got this kind of mythology building towards what you see in the Charlton Heston movies. Is this idea?
The idea of the lawgiver is, well, you know, in the movie he looks just like Dr. Zaius. The statues, he's got the same. He's got the clothes. He's got the
right
standing fully erect. He's got the little monkey boots going on.
Right.
But I think that, you know, much like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they talk about how we don't invite our distant primate relatives to dinner. I think that, you know, in a way, the apes in the 60s movie are a little bit embarrassed about their naked past.
Well, and again...
So naturally, if they're going to depict the mythical characters of their ancient history... Much like, you know, we would put a fig leaf in front of Adam or depict, you know, oftentimes in Renaissance art, you know, Moses was dressed with foppish hat and frilly sleeves and the apparel of the day. And you're like, I don't think I don't think Moses wore hand-embroidered chevron.
And I also don't think, and this might be contentious, and I don't care, it's my show, I also don't think Jesus looked like Hall from Hall & Oates, but apparently he does. So
I think, oddly enough, Da Vinci not only defined the look of Jesus, because if you go back far enough, you find a lot of depictions of Jesus where he's clean-shaven.
Right.
And but once he did that, yes, he not only defined the look of Jesus in iconography for all time, but he also defined Hall of Hall and Oates.
Right, Jesus was a family man. Oh, what? Oh, here she comes.
There we go. Yes, indeed.
Watch out, boys. He'll chew you up. Oh, here she comes. Yeah, okay. Jesus was Hall of Hall and Oates, according to Leonardo da Vinci. Fair enough. Yes, I understand what you're saying.
Weird little time warp thing there.
All right, fine. We've gone so far afield, I don't know if we can get back, so let's just wrap her up. Let's just end this Sicilian thing that we call a show.
We'll leave it at that for now, and invite you to help to join us on a quest, a journey, an odyssey through the fictional cities, countries, provinces, and neighborhoods. Like, you know, would you really want to perpetuate a name like Suicide Slum?
Or Yancey Street?
At least Yancey Street, you know, if you're reading about it or something, you're not going to recognize it for what it is.
Right.
But if you're, you know, Suicide Slum, on the other hand, you don't really want to see that in a travel brochure.
No, you don't. You would stay away from that, right? All right.
I tend to stay away from that.
All right, join us next week. Talk about geography. Thank you again, Cole. This show was phenomenal. I couldn't be happier.
That was amazing and wonderful recommendations. And I can't top Cap Werewolf. That's going to haunt my dreams.
It should. It should. It shouldn't be nightmares. It should be dreams because it's fantastic. Do you want to plug Cap in Texas?
Absolutely. Yes. If in addition to the upcoming North Texas Comic Book Show. Any conventions in Texas, if I'm aware of them, and I try my dead level best to be aware of them all, if it's in the Lone Star State and I'm aware of it, it's on Convention Awareness Project Texas at conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com, the home of pretty much, like I say, every convention in Texas. I maintain a list all year long. Click on the name of the convention, it'll take you to their website, because you can't go if you don't know.
Amen to that. All right, so join us next week, and as always, buy, collect, and enjoy comic books, and don't take our word for it. Go find your own favorites and let us know, because we would love to hear them. Like I said, we've been taking suggestions all along, and I wouldn't have heard about either one of the books I read tonight if it weren't for other people letting me know how great they were. So go read tonight. I suggested tonight. I read them a long time ago. So go check them out. Thank you again. Join us next week. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.